So it's kind of odd to be sitting here in a United States Supreme Court nomination hearing with a $10 million spend and absolutely no idea who's behind it.
Yeah. I don't know why I
came here tonight. That is kind of odd, isn't it? I got the feeling that something ain't right. No, it ain't. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Yep. Yes, I'm stuck in the middle. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ, 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, 92.9 FM WLRI. In Maui, Hawaii, on 88.5 FM KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio, on WGRN 94.1 FM. In Palinville, New York, on 102.9 FM WLPP. In Grand Rapids, on WPRR. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul, on AM 950 KTNF. We're also heard coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. Glad you could join us for another thrilling episode that we call The Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Appreciate you being here today. We have been talking about we've been talking about the confirmation hearings for the illegitimate nomination of Judge Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court. My struggle on this program with how to cover the hearings without normalizing what is not a normal process, because it is, let me be clear, a stolen U.S. Supreme Court seat. Stolen by the Republicans for what will be a stolen U.S. Supreme Court for a generation, if they are allowed to fill it. We spoke on yesterday's Bradcast with law professor Peter Shane from the Moritz College of Law about the remarkable lack of institutional penalty for what the Republicans did here in stealing the Supreme Court seat, in keeping it vacant now for more than a year since the death of Justice Antonin Scalia. You should download that show from yesterday with Peter Shane. You can get it at bradblog.com or iTunes, your favorite podcast site, at KPFK, wherever. But I've got something else I want to get to on all of that today from those ongoing confirmation hearings that are still going on today. I think we're in day number three. But I want to hit a couple of items here very quickly first. This one is just breaking today. In October of last year, almost exactly 1 month before Election Day, the former chair of the Colorado Republican Party, a guy by the name of Steve Curtis, who now has a wingnut talk radio show on our public airwaves, he used those same public airwaves in Denver to misinform the public and to offer this suggestion about voter fraud and Democrats.
It seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that virtually every case of voter fraud I can remember in my lifetime was committed by Democrats. You know, what is the penalty for knowingly committing voter fraud?
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that penalty in a second. And yes, Steve Curtis, I'm happy to correct you for being wrong about that. As the Washington Post reports today, ex-Colorado GOP leader said only Democrats committed voter fraud. Now he's charged with voter fraud. Yep, the 2016 election was just a month away, says the Washington Post, when Steve Curtis, a conservative radio host, former Colorado Republican chair, and advisory board for the Denver Tea Party Patriots, devoted an entire episode of his morning talk show to the heated topic of voter fraud. Well, on Tuesday, Colorado prosecutors threw a wrench into the already dubious theory that Curtis was putting forward, that virtually every case of voter fraud was committed by Democrats. The prosecutor accused Curtis of voter fraud for allegedly filling out and mailing in his ex-wife's 2016 ballot for president, according to Denver's Fox affiliate. Curtis, 57 years old, was charged in Weld County District Court with one count of misdemeanor voter fraud and one count of forgery. That's a Class 5 felony, according to local media. And this case, the Post reports, is the only voter fraud investigation related to the 2016 election in Colorado that has resulted in criminal charges in the state. That, according to the Secretary of State's office, if convicted, Curtis could face from anywhere from 1 to 3 years in prison and a $5,000 fine. So just have to keep bringing that up for just a couple of very quick points. One, because we hear these cases of voter fraud all the time that are committed by Republicans. We saw a Trump supporter charged, I believe it was up in Iowa, for voting twice in this past election. Yes, there is voter fraud by Democrats, and there is voter fraud all over the country, frankly. But it's generally done via vote by mail, the way Steve Curtis did it here, not by polling place fraud, pretending to be somebody who you are not. It's done the way Steve Curtis did. And by the way, Colorado now sends mail-in ballots to all voters. And this is something that I argued against for this exact reason, because where there is voter fraud, it's by vote by mail. And that's something I think we're moving to here in California very quickly, unfortunately. But they moved to it in Colorado, and this sort of thing happens. Just wanted to point it out. This, you know, as Republicans are still insisting we need photo ID restrictions at the polling place, claiming that polling place fraud is rampant. It is not. Trump, of course, has continued to allege there was widespread voter fraud during his election. He claimed 3 to 5 million illegal votes were cast. He called for a major investigation, but so far there has been no such major investigation by Donald Trump. Who can blame him? Because the facts ain't with him on that. So I just wanted to hit that point. Coming up a little bit later in the show, our latest Green News Report with Desi Doyen. Hello, Desi Doyen. I hope you're doing well today. I hope you're surviving.
I am surviving.
We'll have some more news on Trump's proposed budget cuts that go really deep when it comes to climate change in the Green News Report. We're also learning, while we know about these proposed cuts to the budget, to the EPA and environmental and climate programs, that's bad enough. But now we're also hearing about his plans for an executive order that go even further than what is specified in those proposed budget cuts. This from the New York Times today. And I want to get into both of these stories here more in detail, perhaps on tomorrow's broadcast. But I want to hit them real quick. President Trump, according to the New York Times, is poised in the coming days to announce his plans to dismantle the centerpiece of Barack Obama's climate change legacy, while also gutting several smaller but significant policies aimed at curbing global warming. The moves are intended to send an unmistakable signal to the nation and the world that Mr. Trump intends to follow through on his campaign vows to rip apart every element of what the president has called Mr. Obama's, quote, stupid policies to address climate change. Desi Doyen, I guess you're not doing your job well enough.
Well, we keep trying.
And I think you had told me earlier today is this executive order. We don't yet know when it's
coming?
Right.
It has been
rumored to drop ever since the inauguration. And so there clearly is some sort of back and forth going on within the administration internally, because they keep promising or rumoring that they're going to release this executive order to dismantle most of Obama's climate policies. It's been every week for weeks now. Now the new word is it'll drop on Monday, but maybe not even then. It could be as late as the end of next month.
We'll see. And we'll get into these because the details from the New York Times, which claims to have seen a memo outlining exactly what is going to be in that executive order.
Right. A draft.
Startling. And I know that I shouldn't be startled at this point.
Well,
but
the scale,
more details you see.
Yeah, the scale of deconstruction of policies that, you know, not just affect climate change, not just affect and reduce the U.S. emissions, carbon emissions. It's also pollution. You know, this stuff goes into the air. This is pollution and public health that are also impacted when these climate policies are dismantled. That's what the Trump administration is going for.
And as they are going for that, as I said, more details on that in the coming days. But just to balance that thought, because we are nothing here if not fair and balanced. AP reports today, led by cutbacks in China and India, construction of new coal-fired power plants is falling worldwide, improving chances climate goals can be met despite earlier pessimism, three environmental groups said Wednesday. So China and India leading the way here. This joint report from the groups Coal Swarm, Sierra Club, and Greenpeace follows a warning this week by two international agencies that the world needs to shift quickly away from fossil fuels to curb global warming. They say now, these three groups say that, in fact, coal-fired plants in China and India were down 62% in January from a year earlier, while new facilities starting operations declined 29%. According to the report, older plants in the U.S. and Europe are being retired at a record pace. The latest developments, they write, appear to have brought global climate goals within feasible reach, raising the prospect that the worst levels of climate change might be avoided.
So that is great news. That is great news that this global decline in the use of coal to generate electricity is continuing as has been basically trending, you know, for the last couple of years. Two things, though, with Trump basically trying to deconstruct and dismantle Obama's climate policies. If these continue past the 2020 election and the 2018 election, if this dismantling continues, it will make it virtually impossible for the United States to meet its commitments under the United Nations Paris Agreement that Obama signed last year. We made a certain pledge to reduce our emissions 26%, but that won't be possible if these policies do get permanently dismantled. However, you know, if people continue to register and vote in 2018 and 2020, then this is possible to reverse. So the good news is that the world is moving
forward. Yeah, the rest of the world is doing
it.
Exactly. Making America last again. I guess that should be Donald Trump's latest slogan. On a very related topic, albeit to start, we had to go back here to 2014. This is Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, a Democrat from Rhode Island. He's been unrelenting over the years on at least two different points that need to be. These are points that need to be hammered again and again and again, apparently, because they are both, as far as I'm concerned, existential issues for both our country and our planet. Here's Whitehouse, Sheldon Whitehouse, on the floor of the Senate way back in March of 2014 on what happened to the Republicans. And there used to be many of them who used to support legislation to deal with climate change. I know this seems so long ago now that it's hard to remember. But yes, in recent history, recent memory, there was a time when the GOP was working with Democrats to do something about carbon emissions, about climate change, about global warming. Here's Whitehouse on the floor of the Senate in 2014, discussing why it was that prior to 2010, there were a lot of Republicans in the House, in the Senate, even running for the White House. Yes, John McCain and, yes, Sarah Palin in this case, who supported legislation on climate change until something changed. Something happened. And suddenly in 2010, something happened that to this day has changed the entire political landscape in the U.S., especially when it comes to dealing with climate change.
I mentioned earlier how we have a former Republican presidential candidate who campaigned on climate change, how we have a Republican senator who is a co-sponsor of a climate fee bill, how we have a Republican senator who voted for Waxman Markey when he was in the House, how we have Republican senators who have spoken for carbon fee. All of that happened before 2010. What happened in 2010 that drove every Republican back underground on this issue? I'll tell you what happened. The United States Supreme Court decided a case called Citizens United. And the instant they decided Citizens United, the Koch brothers and the big polluters put enormous amounts of money into elections. And they didn't just put the money into elections between Republicans and Democrats. They put money into elections between Republicans and Republicans. They went into primary elections, and they went after Republicans who were not consistent with their orthodoxy on climate change. Unless you were a denier, they either punished you or threatened you. And since that time, that's why there's been silence on the Republican side. It's not because there's not a tradition of Republicans caring about the environment. The Environment Protection Agency was established by a Republican president.
Yep.
Theodore Roosevelt was our greatest conservationist. There is a Republican tradition of this. There's a Republican tradition of standing up to the big money and sticking up for regular people. But not since Citizens United. Not since that baleful decision cast an absolute avalanche of dark money, of unlimited money and anonymous money into the elections.
That was Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island, back in March of 2014, identifying exactly the moment, exactly the thing that changed. The moment when Republicans, they may have had a different way of going about it, a different way to deal with climate change, but they recognized it. They understood it. They wanted to do something about it. Even Republicans like Sarah Palin, that moment changed as soon as the Supreme Court gave its decision in the Citizens United case. Now, we're not hearing much about Citizens United these days, it seems, but we should, because it is still playing a huge outsized role in our politics, in our judiciary. It came up in some detail and for a very important reason during Tuesday's U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court stolen by the Republicans last year. And if Republicans have their way, soon to be filled by Judge Neil Gorsuch. And once again, it was Sheldon Whitehouse who brought up Citizens United in what I think is a very important exchange that didn't get a lot of play in the media. So I want to take a quick break here, break early, because I want to come back and play this extended clip between Whitehouse and Gorsuch from these confirmation hearings, because I think it's really interesting, really important, and really enlightening. So that and maybe some of your calls. See if we have time at 818-985-5735 on any and all of this if you'd like to ring in. You can also tweet me at the Brad Blog. So all of that is next on the Bradcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
If you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all? And if you close your eyes, does it almost feel
it does.
Like you've been here before?
Been here before.
Oh, I'm beginning to be an optimist.
Yes.
About this.
I am going to be an optimist. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. All right, as we reported at bradblog.com way back in 2011. Yes, Desi Doyen, we're going backwards. Don't worry. We'll come back to the present. Back in 2011, we reported at bradblog.com that during, by then, Justice Clarence Thomas's contentious confirmation hearing for the U.S. Supreme Court back in 1991, he received a huge boost when an outside organization ran $100,000 worth of television commercials. And back then, that was a lot of money. $100,000 worth of television commercials attacking those senators who were threatening to vote against Thomas's very contentious nomination back then. That organization, the name of that organization that spent $100,000 to get Clarence Thomas onto the Supreme Court, it was a newly formed organization by the name of Citizens United. Nonprofit group called Citizens United spent $100,000 at that time. 20 years later, and frankly, without either Thomas disclosing it or anyone in the media connecting the dots, Thomas decided in favor of Citizens United in the now famous Citizens United versus the FEC case, which allowed a tsunami of corporate money into our political and our electoral system. It was that decision that allowed corporations to pour virtually unlimited money into 501c4 nonprofits that could, in turn, then use the money to affect elections with millions of dollars in campaign ads, etc. As we also noted back in 2011, Ginny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, created one of those 501c4 organizations just after oral arguments in the Citizens United case. Just after those oral arguments were argued before her husband in the Citizens United case, and somehow Ginny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, somehow managed to raise $550,000 for that newly formed group in about 2 months, in about 2 months' time, just before the end of 2009. So that was back what we reported in 2011 about what happened in 1991. Now, a lot of folks have lost track of the devastating impact of Citizens United on our electoral system in the wake of Donald Trump's election. For a whole lot of reasons, but among them, he ran with his own or at least much less money than previous presidential elections. All of the other presidential candidates, they enjoyed the fruits big time, bigly, of Citizens United, the other presidential candidates on the Republican side. But Trump's relentless appeal to issues supported by those dark money funders like the Koch brothers and their anti-environment crusade, that relentless appeal was key to Trump's reported victory and, of course, to a Republican House and Republican Senate candidates last November. Now, I haven't been covering the confirmation hearings of Gorsuch in great detail, because I think it normalizes the process of Republicans having stolen the Supreme Court and its majority for a generation. So I don't care about Gorsuch's opinions on things, frankly. I don't care what they are. They're essentially the same as Scalia's, by the way, though he's about 30 years younger. But as I've been saying, since Gorsuch was nominated, I don't believe he should have received the nomination at all because it's a stolen Supreme Court. And no matter how wonderful he is or how not wonderful he is, you like his record or not, Gorsuch should be opposed and filibustered by Democrats, if only because there needs to be some kind of institutional punishment, as I discussed yesterday with Moritz Law College professor Peter Shane. Some kind of institutional punishment for what the Republicans did here. You can download that show at bradblog.com. But some kind of punishment for this unprecedented theft of a Supreme Court seat. And Shane talked about the fact we have never seen anything like that in the history of our country. But I want to play, so I haven't been covering these hearings, Gorsuch's record in detail, because I don't care. But I want to play this fascinating extended exchange between, once again, Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island,
and Neil Gorsuch on Tuesday, with White House asking about the now $10 million in so-called dark money, thanks to Citizens United, from these undisclosed donors, or maybe even just one donor. Who knows? One funder could be putting forward $10 million. This $10 million that is about to be spent on TV and radio and print ads and other efforts to support Gorsuch's confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court. And in addition to that $10 million to support him, some $7 million from some of the same front groups with undisclosed donors that was spent last year to oppose, to in fact block the confirmation of then President Barack Obama's nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court, Judge Merrick Garland. Now, this was about a 30-minute exchange yesterday, so it didn't get picked up by a lot of media. I've tried to cut it down now. I think it's still about 15 minutes, but I think it's important, so I want to play it in full here. I think it's important not so much because it raises questions about Gorsuch himself, who I don't care about, though I think it does raise questions about Gorsuch himself. And I'd love to try and take some of your calls on this afterwards, if time allows. 818-985-5735 is our phone number, 818-985-5735. But because I think it lays bare the entire problem with our political and our judicial system at this point. As I say, this nominee, I believe, should be opposed, period, unless his name is Merrick Garland, just out of principle. But this exchange between White House and Gorsuch is revealing and important. And frankly, kudos to Senator Whitehouse for so consistently keeping the concerns about dark money and Citizens United and its corruption of our political and judicial system out front whenever he can, whenever anybody bothers to listen to him. So I thought, you know what? We'll listen to him. Here's White House and Gorsuch on Tuesday.
Thank you, Chairman. Let me ask unanimous consent to put into the record a letter from over 100 groups dated March 14, 2017, regarding what they describe as Judge Gorsuch's troubling money and politics record, and a letter from Demos dated March 9, 2017, urging opposition to Judge Gorsuch's confirmation, and a New York Times article captioned, "Neil Gorsuch has web of ties to secretive billionaire."
Without objection, all three documents will be included.
Thank you. Now, let's talk for a minute about money. And in particular, let's talk about dark money. Are you familiar with that term?
In the loosest sense.
How would you describe it in the loosest sense, just to make sure you and I are on the same wavelength?
Senator, I as I understand it, you may be referring to money that's not spent by a candidate or a party in connection with...
And where you actually don't know who the true source of the money is.
Okay.
Is that a fair enough definition for us to agree on? Okay. Could you let us know first what you know about the campaign that is being run to support your confirmation? There's been a lot of talk about how this is outside of politics and we're above politics, but there's a group that is planning to spend $10 million on TV ads in which their own press release describes as a comprehensive campaign of paid advertising, earned media, research, grassroots activity, and a coalition enterprise, all adding up to the most robust operation in the history of confirmation battles. That sounds pretty political to me, and I'm wondering what you know about that.
I've heard a lot about it, Senator, from you, from others. I've heard a lot about it.
Do you know, what do you know about it?
I know that there is a lot of money being spent in this by, as I understand it, both sides.
I think. Well, I wouldn't leap to that conclusion at this point.
Okay. I know what I've read. I know what I've heard from friends and family and acquaintances. I know what you're saying, what you've just indicated, that there appears to be a lot of money being spent.
Do you know who's spending the money?
Senator, I could speculate based on what I've read and what I've heard, but I don't know individuals were contributing. I don't know that.
Do you know if your friend Mr. Anschutz is contributing?
I don't know.
Do you think that it should matter who is contributing? Do you think that there's a public interest in the public knowing who is contributing?
Well, Senator, I think we've got a long tradition indicating that this body has robust authority to regulate disclosure.
But my question is, do you think there's a public interest
and Senator,
in disclosure of political funds in a democracy? That's, I don't think, a prejudgment. That's just a values proposition and one of the considerations that you ought to be able to answer without much hesitation.
And Senator, what I'm prepared to say is I recognize that as a matter of First Amendment interests, the Supreme Court has validated the proposition that disclosure serves important functions in a democracy. At the same time, the Supreme Court's also acknowledged that those disclosure functions can sometimes themselves have unintended consequences, as with the NAACP case, which I know you're familiar with, where you can use disclosure as a weapon to try and silence people. And we have a long
That's
history in this.
Hardly the case with respect to the dark money operation that is funding this campaign in your favor, is it?
Senator, I'm not prejudging any case. What I am suggesting to you is that there are interests here in this area of First Amendment disclosure. That's what we're talking about,
yep,
in my mind, generally, okay, that are competing. On the one hand, in order for informed voters and citizens to be able to make decisions, the Supreme Court in Buckley has validated the interest that this body has in regulating disclosure.
And in theory, so did the court in Citizens United.
And in theory, in Citizens United. At the same time, the courts also recognized in NAACP, for example, that disclosure can be used as a weapon to silence voices. And we have a long history of anonymous speech serving valuable functions in this country.
Here's a live example right now. We have this $10 million that is being spent on behalf of your confirmation. Do you think, for instance, that we on this panel ought to know who is behind that? And, well, answer that, and then I'll go on to a related question.
Senator, that's a policy question for this body.
Well, it's also a question of disclosure. You could ask right now that as a matter of courtesy, as a matter of respect to the process, that anybody who is funding this should declare themselves so that we can evaluate who is behind this effort.
Senator.
Right? That wouldn't be a policy determination. That would be your values determination.
It would be a politics question. And I'm not, with all respect, Senator, going to get involved in politics.
Do you really think that a Supreme Court that decided Citizens United doesn't get involved in politics?
Senator, I think every justice on the Supreme Court of the United States is a remarkable person trying their level best to apply the law faithfully.
And they got deeply involved in politics, did they not? They changed the entire political environment, the entire political ecosystem with one decision. What could be more involved in politics than to open this ocean of dark money that's flooded into our politics?
Senator, what I mean to suggest is that I believe every justice on that court is trying to apply the First Amendment and the laws of this country faithfully. It's hard. Judges make half the people unhappy 100% of the time. That's our job description.
This is a little different. I think you see more like 90% of the public unhappy with Citizens United because they see the problem that it caused in our democracy. This is the Supreme Court operating in its role as the legal constitutional guide to the operation of American democracy. And if they get that wrong, that is a much, much bigger deal, whether their motivations were pure or impure. When or whether they got that wrong is a bigger question than just which party won, wouldn't you agree?
Senator, if a court errs as a matter of law, there are various remedies.
If a question were to come up regarding recusal on the court, how would we know that the partiality question in a recusal matter had been adequately addressed if we did not know who was spending all of this money to get you confirmed? Hypothetically, it could be one individual. Hypothetically, it could be your friend, Mr. Anschutz. We don't know because it's dark money. But if you were to ever find that out, or even if you were to have suspicions, I think in any challenge as to whether recusal was appropriate or not, these would be facts that would be noteworthy and that we'd be entitled to have an answer to. So it's kind of odd to be sitting here in a United States Supreme Court nomination hearing with a $10 million spend taking place for you out there in the political world and absolutely no idea who's behind it. Is that any cause of concern to you?
Senator, I'm not sure what the question for me is.
Is it any cause of concern to you that your nomination is the focus of a $10 million political spending effort and we don't know who's behind it?
Senator, there's a lot about the confirmation process today that I regret. A lot.
Yeah?
A lot. When Byron White sat here, it was 90 minutes. He was through this body in 2 weeks, and he smoked cigarettes while he gave his testimony. There's a great deal about this process I regret. I regret putting my family through this.
But to my question.
Senator, the fact of the matter is, it is what it is, and it's this body that makes the laws. And if you wish to have more disclosure, pass a law and a judge will enforce it, Senator.
That just doesn't do, Judge Gorsuch. There are going to be questions that you will be asked to decide on the United States Supreme Court that are going to be dependent on the values you bring to this. I don't think you can avoid talking about those values here. You're an expert on antitrust law, and when you write about antitrust law, you understand that there are values to which the law should be directed if it's going to be successful. You've written about the values of competition, that the antitrust law should operate in such a way as to maximize and support competition, and that the antitrust law should be read in such a way as to maximize and support innovation. Those are proper values for a judge applying antitrust law to pursue. The part that I'm asking about is the values determination, and I'm trying to determine if you think that openness with respect to the money that flows around in our democracy in such large numbers right now is a value that is worth pursuing. Is it a touchstone? Is it a lodestar? Or is it just a burden on people's communication?
Okay, I'd refer you again to Buckley versus Valeo. NAACP.
I'm asking actually you. Not...
And I'm giving you my answer, Senator, as best I can.
Okay.
Which is the First Amendment, which I'm sworn to uphold as a judge, contains two competing messages here. On the one hand, it has regularly recognized the rights of this body to legislate in this area if it wishes to do so. On the other hand, it has recognized there may be limits when it chills expression, as it did in the NAACP case. And we have to be worried about that.
So if we have to be worried about the chilling of expression, which is a value proposition that you have just enunciated, should we not, am I not also entitled to ask the question about whether we should be worried about the influence of dark money essentially corrupting our politics?
Instead of what I'm
taking a lot of time to get what I would think would be a fairly simple answer.
Well, I'm sorry, but I don't think this is simple stuff at all, Senator. I think this is hard stuff. And I think you've got First Amendment concerns and precedents, all right, in the area.
Yeah.
Would have to be considered. We'd have to see what law Congress enacted. I'd then want to go through the full judicial process, Senator. I'd want to read the briefs. I'd want to keep an open mind.
I understand, but you just asserted right here that the value of not chilling speech was something that we should consider, right?
I said the Supreme Court of the United States and NAACP recognized that the First Amendment protections we all as people in this country enjoy,
which is a value that we should consider,
can be chilled.
And sometimes. Not chilling is a value that we should consider.
It's a First Amendment right we're talking about, Senator.
And where does an anonymity, let's say $1 billion in anonymous funding into our elections, where does that fit in your into the values that you bring to this?
In the first instance, Senator, it's for this body to legislate.
Yeah.
And then it would come to court and a record would be made.
Of course, Citizens United did actually overrule a law that we had written, so that's hardly the be-all and the end-all.
Well, it's a dialogue. And, Senator, that's our history. Our founders were brilliant. They didn't give me all the power. I don't wear a crown, I wear a robe. They didn't give you all the power.
When it
they
comes
divided
to
it.
The determination to state what the law is, particularly in constitutional matters, they actually did give the Supreme Court the power. And that's why it's important to us to ask these questions now before you go on to the Supreme Court and we have no accountability left. Let me ask something slightly different. You said you knew Judge Garland.
I do. I wouldn't claim him as my closest personal friend, but someone whom I admire greatly.
And would you describe, how would you describe any differences that you may have in judicial philosophy with Chief Judge Garland?
I would leave that for others to characterize. I don't like it when people characterize me, and I would not prefer to characterize him. He can characterize himself.
What's interesting is that this group sees a huge difference between you that I don't understand. The dark money group that is spending money on your election spent at least $7 million against him getting a hearing and a confirmation here, and indeed produced that result by spending that money. And then now we have $10 million going the other way. That's a $17 million delta. And for the life of me, I'm trying to figure out what they see in you that makes that $17 million delta worth their spending. Do you have any answer to that?
You'd have to ask them.
I can't because I don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. It's just a front group.
And that's the problem. That was Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat from Rhode Island, speaking with Judge Neil Gorsuch yesterday in the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings for Gorsuch's nomination to the stolen Supreme Court. And talking about this $10 million that's being spent in Gorsuch's favor by these front groups, $7 million that was spent against the proper nominee to the Supreme Court, Judge Merrick Garland, by these same groups, and nobody knows who they are. And Gorsuch says you'll have to ask them why. And why they're willing to spend that kind of money. And White House says, I can't. Nobody knows who they are. Now, I played that not to frankly, bash Neil Gorsuch, but to highlight how this works. How outrageous it is that the way dark money affects even, Supreme Court nominees here. When it's not even an election immediately involved. And Gorsuch's response, he's so worried about chilling free speech, anonymous free speech, that he's happy to talk about. But the corrupting influence of money, he did not say one word about that. Now, there was much more in their exchange. Maybe we'll be able to get to it later in the week. There was a short exchange concerning the dark money outfits like Koch Brothers and their meetings with billionaires, their secret meetings with billionaires and millionaires, or at least the ones that used to be secret. I broke a story, I think, 2011 at Mother Jones and at bradblog.com about Chris Christie and his secret speech that he gave to this one of these Koch Brothers summits in Vail, Colorado. I was able to obtain the audio of that very secret speech. That was before Christie had disgraced himself with Bridgegate, when it looked like he was really one of the leading contenders for the presidential nomination. But Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas, they were both reported to have attended those Koch brothers functions. So they could, you know, shake hands with these right-wing millionaires and billionaires. And Gorsuch said in further conversation with White House that that was all news to him. He had never heard of any such thing. Really? Really, Neil Gorsuch? You worked for George W. Bush's fabled Department of Justice, and you hadn't heard of such things? One other point before we get to a break here, and we'll come back to the Green News Report and maybe some calls. 818-985-5735, if I can get to them. 818-985-5735. Gorsuch was talking about, well, you just need more disclosure. If you need that, you just pass laws, pass another law to demand it. Well, there's a reason why a law has not been passed for more disclosure since Citizens United. Because of the gerrymandered seats that are protected by that same dark money. So you can't just, no, Congress can't just go out and create a new law to deal with this. And as a matter of fact, Citizens United itself gutted a law that had been passed by Congress concerning elections, the McCain-Feingold law. So it's Gorsuch is somewhat disingenuous there. But more importantly, I think just the picture, because again, I don't care about Neil Gorsuch. He needs to be opposed. You should call your senator and tell them to filibuster. You can call the Capitol 202-224-3121 and tell them to filibuster anybody not named Merrick Garland at this point. So I don't care about Gorsuch, but I wanted to underscore this is right now what controls our entire electoral system, our entire judicial system. Yes, we have judicial elections all across the country that are affected by these same disclosure laws or lack of disclosure laws. And they affect the Supreme Court itself in a nomination hearing like this, even when there's not an election anywhere to be found. $10 million being spent by who knows who to support this guy and to oppose $7 million to oppose the proper nominee for the seat. Just wanted to play that. I think it's fascinating. It hasn't gotten a lot of coverage. So there you have it. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back with Desi Doyen and the Green News Report. Maybe some calls. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman. Thank you for listening to the Bradcast. That can only mean one thing. Desi Doyen is here with our latest Green News Report. Des, before we go to the latest GNR, Rick Hassin, UC Irvine law professor, just tweeted that Gorsuch was given another chance, I guess just now, at the confirmation hearings to distance himself from Justice Scalia's comments on the Voting Rights Act in Shelby County when Scalia called the Voting Rights Act a racial entitlement.
Oh, yeah.
Gorsuch apparently was unwilling to do so.
He was unwilling to separate himself from Scalia's remarks that voting protections are a racial entitlement. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I know. Running late here. We'll get to our GNR and then hopefully some calls. Morris, hang on. Morris is always great.
I know.
Very
we'll
quick.
Try to get to you, Morris.
We can always get to it. But first, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
As to climate change, I think the president was fairly straightforward. We're not spending money on that anymore.
Trump's proposed budget cuts go deepest on climate change.
Flooding and mudslides caused by intense rains in Peru has now left at least 72 people dead.
Extreme rains trigger catastrophic deadly flooding in Peru. Trump's Supreme Court nominee blocked environmental lawsuits. Plus, Defense Secretary calls climate change a national security threat, at least in writing.
All of that writing on the wall straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The White House celebrated St. Patrick's Day by slashing green energy. If only there was a way to get the F-35 to run on coal, it would be a perfect budget.
No kidding. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of coal, Donald Trump said on Monday at a rally in Kentucky, quote, "As we speak, we are preparing new executive actions to save our coal industry and to save our wonderful coal miners from continuing to be put out of work. The miners are coming back," Trump told the rally in Louisville, Kentucky, without providing any details.
Of course he didn't, because coal jobs are not coming back.
Well, don't tell that to the new president.
Meanwhile, Senate confirmation hearings began this week for Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Judge Neil Gorsuch of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. In the Trump era, environmental groups are hoping the legal system will help protect the environment and public health. But Mother Jones reports that Judge Gorsuch, throughout his career, routinely blocked environment-related cases from reaching the court at all, ruling that groups don't have standing to sue, for example. Gorsuch has also criticized a judicial tenet called the Chevron Doctrine, in which judges defer to agency experts, especially science experts, rather than their own opinions in their rulings.
No comment. It's a stolen Supreme Court seat.
The Trump administration's proposed budget plans to eliminate programs that poor Americans rely on, like one that helps low-income households weatherize their homes. Another helps Alaskan towns build water infrastructure as the permafrost melts underneath them. The budget also specifically targets federal climate change programs, like those that help developing countries adapt to climate impacts. Why? Well, here's Mick Mulvaney, director of the White House's Office of Management and Budget.
As to climate change, I think the president was fairly straightforward. We're not spending money on that anymore. We consider that to be a waste of your money to go out and do that. So that is a specific tie to his campaign.
Promises made, promises kept. Well done, Trump voters.
The administration's budget also kills the Department of Energy's innovative and popular Advanced Research Projects Agency, known as ARPA-E, which does advanced research on energy from biofuels to batteries. Despite the Trump administration's denial of climate science, Defense Secretary General James Mattis says that climate change is a threat to national security.
What?
At least in writing. In written testimony following his January confirmation hearing, Mattis explicitly called climate change a national security issue, a driver of, quote, instability that requires a whole-of-government response. In an interview with NPR, Brigadier General Gerald Galloway of the Center for Climate and Security explained why.
If our allies are having problems in their own country as a result of such things as drought, where there's instability in the country, instability breeds conflict, and conflict is what puts our forces at risk, and we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I remember years ago reporting on Syria and the drought there, and look what happened, and you had folks on the right making fun of us just for reporting those facts.
Meanwhile, in Peru, at least 72 people have died and thousands are homeless after record rains triggered flooding and landslides in the coastal region that officials say washed away entire communities along with roads, bridges, and crops. Meteorologists blame an unusual, sudden, and abnormal warming of the Pacific waters off the coast of Peru, sort of like a localized El Nino that turbocharged the storms.
These abnormal things are becoming more and more normal each day, it seems.
Here in the U.S., the drastic swings between February's record heat and March's late-season record snow have severely damaged crops in the Midwest and the Southeast, fooling plants and fruit trees that budded only to be killed by the surprise deep freeze and cause hundreds of millions of dollars in economic losses to the agriculture industry. But finally, some good news. Despite Donald Trump's extensive criticism of wind turbines, the administration at least is allowing offshore wind farms to go forward. Last week, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management held an auction for offshore wind farm leases in federal waters off the coast of North Carolina, with plans to go ahead for a similar lease auction for the coasts of Massachusetts and New York.
How thoughtful of them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yes, some mighty winds are blowing across the land and across the sea. It's blowing peace and freedom. It's blowing you and me.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Very much appreciated. Let me go to Morris, because I think he's the only one we can rely on to actually keep it to about 30 seconds or so. Morris in Long Beach, California. Hey, Morris, welcome to the broadcast. What's on your mind, brother?
I don't need that, Brad. Listen, I want to give a shout-out to the Democratic Party. They did a great job of silencing the voices of the people, losing 30 state houses, building more prisons and school, and got homelessness like we've never seen it before. Go Democrats. What do you think, Brad?
Well, yeah, they kind of did a crappy job of a whole bunch of stuff, didn't they? Listen, but we can't ignore the fact of big money, dark money in this entire thing over the past, I don't know how many years. Yes, I'm not happy, of course, with the Democrats at all. But the way things have been gerrymandered, if you look at the way the policies that are moving forward that are unbelievably unpopular, and yet these Republicans, they don't care. They're not afraid. They know that they've got they've gerrymandered their district. They're going to have reliable dark money to run in their elections, and they are no longer frightened. They are only frightened about a primary, frankly, from another Republican. Be nice if Democrats were worried and frightened about a primary from another Democrat. We'll work on that next time. Until then, my thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com, along with all of the shows we do 5 days a week. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. That is it. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.